meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
I came across this story in the, the Arizona Republic. Okay, it actually goes back a little bit, but it says, pack up your Tupperware and get ready for a new kind of party. Dana Schaffman, founder of Shield Her Incorporated, has recently started sponsoring taser parties, giving women a chance to buy a taser for $300, $350, whatever, with a laser beam to help aiming. Schaffman's parties allow women to get together and discuss concerns and learn about the taser and, of course, safety for women. And I thought, what a great story, and it's been getting a lot of press here lately. I thought I'd bring Dana on the program. Hi, Dana.
Hi there, Dana. How are you?
Oh, that's great. You know, I love a guest with the same name. In fact, I don't know if I've had a guest with the same name, and I've been doing this show for about 10 years now. Now, this is a fantastic...
Honored to be the first,
yeah,
I have to say. The first of many.
You bet.
I tell you.
This is a fantastic idea. Now, tasers, as you know, have been getting a lot of bad press lately with law enforcement and some deaths. When pepper spray first came out and police officers started carrying it, it was similar to what's going on right now. We're not going to get into the legalities and all that kind of stuff right now, but I think you've got a fantastic idea with Shield Her Incorporated. I'm assuming you were just at the Consumer Electronics Show talking about your product, but let's get into how did you get started into selling tasers?
Well, you know, I actually was looking for my own personal satisfaction device or tool or something that would actually help me feel safe day in and day out. So I wasn't feeling like, oh, I need a man to complete my life to make me feel safe and kind of, you know, you complete me kind of thing.
Right.
I wanted to just know that I could protect myself. You know, not to say that I don't want a man down the road, but,
okay,
you know, presently there wasn't any, you know, anything going on that would lead me to have something. But even if there was, I think that all too often we rely on others for personal safety. And I think...
Right.
You really can only rely on yourself, because the only person you can guarantee to be in that situation is you.
And, you know, you're absolutely right, and we've done personal safety shows on my program for many, many years now, and when it comes to that, and it comes to statistics, we all know that females are statistically greater. Numbers of females are victims of crime, whether they're out walking and being mugged, to even domestic disputes, to you name it. And any sort of protection, you know, the old days they had self-defense classes and whatever, and coming now with technology the way that it is, I think the taser is a fantastic idea. Talk about a typical taser party.
Sure. We, you know, and I try and equate it, as you've heard me say many, many times before, I'm sure, through the media, that it is a Tupperware-style party. It's the same concept, whereas you bring women together, you know, back then they were looking for what do we do with all the leftovers that we're making. You know, that was the biggest issue back then. So, of course, they pacified that issue by creating Tupperware and having Tupperware parties.
Right.
Same thing, just fast forward, you know, 50, 60 plus years, and you get to the biggest concern, and it certainly resonates through the media if you watch television at all. All you see is war and death and rape and murder, and, you know, and after a while you think, okay, well, if it happens to all of them, there's a possibility that I could be next.
Right.
And rather than, you know, then do something like that. So in any case, at the party, basically what we do is we do a meet and mingle. That way it gives people an opportunity to come together and really talk to each other about why they're there in the first place. Why even come to a taser party? What's the draw? You know, clearly it's personal safety, and people are concerned for their own safety because obviously you can't go into shopping malls or go to school without somebody opening fire on you, which is certainly a sad state.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, in our nation these days. But nonetheless, we come together, we talk about our fears. I formally introduce everybody to Shielder. I usually give them an opportunity to learn a little bit about why the company was started, which was for my own personal safety issues. And then we generally bring in someone to talk about self-defense. Now, in the event someone's not available, we'll still give some crime statistics as well as some tips on how to be safe. And then after that, we bring in a taser expert that basically goes through the actual device, talks about the specifications and the manner in which they've used it. The gentleman that has come with me as of late has been an officer, mm-hmm. so he's in the police force, and he's certainly used it a number of times, so he's got a lot of experience. And then, obviously, what people get the biggest charge out of is firing and deploying the taser. But it gives people an opportunity to really release those fears that they've had based on what they've seen in the media with regard to the damage that the taser has done.
Absolutely. And when you practice or demonstrate, do you demonstrate on the officer, or do you have a cardboard cutout, or what do you use?
We actually use a corkboard, your standard Office Max style corkboard. That's it. And we put a target on in the front, and Taser sells a great target that, you know, that lights up. And so we generally use something like that, and they just shoot against a corkboard, but you can do it against a box. If you were practicing on your own, we do a special where you get a free two-pack, so you gives people an opportunity to practice, because I believe in that. I believe in firing or deploying a device prior to ever having to be in a situation to need to deploy it, so that way you kind of get a good indication of what it feels like, what it sounds like, a good comfort level with it. So we suggest to use a cardboard box. You know, use anything that an inch of fish hook can penetrate and not puncture.
Now, you see police officers with the, I call them the Glock-style taser strapped to their leg or wherever. Tell us a little bit about the style that you're offering. Obviously, you don't walk around like a gunslinger with this thing wrapped around your leg, do you?
Correct. No, I actually do not. Although, you know, certainly a great idea to make a device that people could, say, go jogging with,
right,
and wrap around their legs. So certainly nothing against a device like that. But at the same time, I actually just carry mine in my purse, and my purse is super heavy because I carry at least the four colors that there used to be. Now there's two additional colors. There's a leopard and a red,
okay,
which were actually just introduced at the CES show. So I carry mine in my pocketbook, in my purse, in my pocket. If I'm wearing a big jacket, I'll throw it in my pocket. It's about the size, I would say, of a man's electric shaver.
Mm-hmm.
It's about roughly that size, a little slimmer than that. And it weighs maybe a pound at the most.
And the comparison between what law enforcement carries and what you're offering, are they similar, the same, a little bit different as far as the specifications, what the effect would be if you're taking down somebody with it?
Sure. Essentially, the core of the device is the same. They both put out 50,000 volts. So, you know, they're going to put out the same amount of electricity. There's a few major differences. One is obviously the appearance of the device.
Right.
The other one is the fact that the police taser puts out 50,000 volts at a certain interval, which I'm not privy to.
Right.
And it goes continuously for 5 seconds. That's it. Whereas the consumer model puts out the same amount of voltage, 50,000 volts. It does it at a different interval than the police taser because it goes continuously for 30 seconds. So it might give them the most at 5 seconds and then drop all the way down and then pop back up at the end. But again, I don't really know the exact inner workings of what's deployed and how that electricity, you know, goes up and down. But nonetheless, what it does is it subdues an attacker, a potential rapist, a potential murderer, so that you can get out of that situation. So basically, that's the goal for the potential victim.
And safety is our main goal. My audience, Dana, is North American, actually worldwide. The legalities of this, as far as you selling in the United States, I have Canadian listeners, listeners in Mexico, all over the place. Are you just selling in the States now?
Yes. In fact, right now, for me personally, I'm bound by the United States boundary. There are, I believe there are some distributors outside of the United States. I would say that would be an excellent question in the event your listeners wanted to contact Taser. If they do live in other countries, there might be a distributor in that country. It's few and far between. Obviously, it still is a controversial device that not everyone's comfortable with yet. But there are also some states that prohibit use. We put an entire list of those states at the very bottom of our website at shielder.com. So that way everybody knows up front the states. In fact, you can't even register on our site if you are in one of those states, unfortunately. So, but it's about 7 or 8 states that actually prohibit citizen use. And then there are some cities that prohibit it. So we ask that you check your local laws, or again, if you go to our website, you can learn all of that information off there.
And again, the website is www.shieldher.com. And this is Dana Schaffman, and I'm going to use this pun. You're probably getting sick of hearing it, but your taser parties, I'm sure, are a stunning success.
They are a stunning success. And, you know, our goal at Shielder is really just to help women empower themselves so they don't have to live in fear or be a victim.
Absolutely, and that's an important thing. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you for having me on, Dana. I really enjoyed it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about a missing person from Rice University, Matthew J. Wilson. His mom, Kathy, will be here. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
And we're back. Matthew Wilson, a 20-year-old computer science major and straight-A student at Rice University, has been missing since December 15th, 2007. According to reports, Matthew Wilson made a cash withdrawal from his bank account on December 14th, the last day he was seen. Matthew is described as a 20-year-old Caucasian male, 5'7", approximately 135 pounds, red hair, green eyes, wears glasses. He had a full beard when his roommate last seen him. If anyone has any information about Matthew Wilson's whereabouts, please call the Rice University Police Department at 713-348-6000. That's 713-348-6000. Or to call the Crime Stoppers offer line, call 713-222-TIPS. That's 713-222-8477. On the air with me now is Matthew Wilson's mom, Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hello there.
It's always difficult, and I've done many, many stories with parents of missing people, and what we don't hear about, we know about the case and the circumstances, and of course our goal and our prayer is to find the missing, is we don't hear about the missing person themselves, about what they're like. The story that I have here, Kathy, says that your son was not a drinker, was not a partier, and this is just so strange for him to disappear like this. Tell us about your son.
Well, yes, he's highly intelligent. He's computer savvy. One of his computer professors said that he was his top student, and even his partners on his projects say Matthew, who knows everything about computers, he does. He's smart, but he's also funny, gentle, kind, warming. He loves animals. He is just, and I'm not prejudiced, he's just about the best son you could ask for.
Well, yeah, and you know, then a mother's right is to say that, that's for sure. When was the last time that you heard from Matthew? Obviously, he went missing on the 15th of December, or was reported missing. When was the last time you heard from him?
Last time I spoke to him was December the 7th.
And how was he then?
He seemed fine. He was busy getting ready for his finals and rushed, you know, and preoccupied. He has a heavy course load. Maggie does put a lot of pressure on himself to do good at his projects and assignments. He's just that way. He likes to give his best to his studies.
Was he planning on coming home for Christmas?
Yes. He was going to come here to Oklahoma, and then we were going to drive up to my daughter's in Tulsa, his sister's.
Were you going to pick him up, or was he coming to your place on his own?
Matthew always, after the day, the last day of school, he always comes, leaves Rice around noon, and arrives home around 6:30 the next day, and then the day after that, that's when we would go to my daughter's.
How was he planning on traveling home?
He was going to drive his car.
And what kind of a car, and could you tell us, have the police any information about his car? Is his car still there? Is his car missing also?
His car has been gone as long as Matthew's been gone. It's a 2004 Dodge Neon Silver four-door. It has Oklahoma license plates, and on the front license plate, it's blue with the word Robbins in white. That's the car dealership we got it from.
Okay, and his car has been missing since then. The police department, what is the status of the investigation? What have they been able to tell you?
Neil, I don't know no more than I guess from day one, really.
So they haven't...
Tell me.
No leads?
No leads.
Okay.
Matthew's disappeared off the face of the earth.
The roommate, is this a dorm apartment that they were living in?
They live in an apartment. It's more or less like a duplex. There's two apartments downstairs and two upstairs.
And so is this a roommate that stayed in the same apartment with him, or just someone that shared the duplex?
The roommate was in the same apartment as Matthew.
And have you spoken to the roommate?
Yes, I have, and I like him. He's a very nice, well-mannered boy. He's similar to Matthew. He's kind, gentle, caring. They shared hobbies together. They got along very well. That's why they decided they'd been roommates the previous year with two other roommates, and then they decided to get an apartment together.
Was some Matthew on any sort of medication? Did he have any sort of medical problems?
No, Matthew's healthy. He has a yearly physical. He goes to the dentist two times a year, too. I make sure of that when he comes home for summer. And then in the Christmas vacation, he has his medical appointment, and he's not on medication.
Now, obviously, a dedicated student, heavy course load, like you say. Did he have time for extracurricular activities, girlfriends, things like that?
Well, Matthew's kind of a girl like their own group. Him and Elliot, his roommate, they did model cars together and computer games, Guitar Hero games. Like that, movie together, and then you know, Matthew participated in the events, things like that, but he was not a partier or a drinker or a person that stayed out late, you know, that's the way it was. But Matthew, he never did that way when he was in high school either.
Did have the police, I'm sure they've done this, but I'll ask you, have they checked on banking transactions, credit cards, debit cards, things like that?
Yes, they have, and since the 14th, when those two transactions were made, there's been no further transactions whatsoever.
Have the police told you, or can you tell us, if there was a surveillance camera at the ATM that he used for the last withdrawal that he made?
Unfortunately, no. No cameras there. The Rice police told me they were surprised that at the number of ATMs in Houston that do not have surveillance cameras.
Yeah, that's really strange. Again, Matthew... Matthew Wilson is described as a 20-year-old Caucasian male, 5'7", approximately 135 pounds, red hair, green eyes, wearing glasses. He had a full beard when his roommate last saw him. And Kathy, could I get you to give the vehicle information one more time, please?
I don't have the license plate number on me, but it's a 2004 Dodge Neon four-door, silver in color. Anybody can go to the website findmatthewwilson.tk/, and even you can go to rice.edu and see the license plate number.
And, of course, we have information here at scaredmonkeys.com. And if you have any information, call the Rice University Police Department right away, 713-348-6000. Or there's also a Crime Stoppers offer at 713-222-TIPS. That's 713-222-8477. Kathy, our hearts and prayers are with you. And I'll keep in contact with you and do more stories so we can try and get some answers for you.
And I want to tell everybody there's nothing that this Wilson family will not do to get our Matthew Wilson back. He's very important to us. He's my only son. My Matthew is everything to me. And anybody that knows me knows that Matthew Wilson is my world.
Well,
I love him to death. He knows that. I just want people to keep on continuing their praying and looking for Matthew Wilson. His beard is bright red. His hair is reddish brown, curly. He's let it grow longer. He has green eyes. He doesn't have to wear his glasses all the time. He's light in build, fair complected. He has a mole on his right earlobe.
Well, we can only hope and pray that answers will come to you soon, and Matthew will come home to you soon. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank everybody for listening and helping me look for Matthew Wilson.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's hope that we get some answers. Again, Matthew Wilson, 20 years age, 5'7", 135, red hair, green eyes, wears glasses sometimes, has a full beard, and again, call the Rice University Police Department, 713-348-6000. We're going to take a break here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and we'll be back in just a minute with crime historian and author and the guy behind FredRosen.com. He's always an interesting guest. Controversial sometimes, but always fun to interview. We'll be back in just a minute talking to Fred about the stories of today and what the political things that are going on across North America, the United States, Canada, wherever. Are our politicians really concerned about crime, or is it just a bunch of hot air? This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
And we're back. If you go to FredRosen.com, FredRosen.com, you'll see the website of a frequent guest on my program, author, crime historian, and we're going to talk a little bit about his blog that he has there. And on January 15th, our guest, Fred Rosen, will be on Broadminded on XM Satellite Radio, True Crime with the Broads. We can talk about
like that.
I love that. Hi, Fred. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, Dana. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. We got a little bit of breaking crime news. Maybe you've heard about it already. OJ is back in the jug. Your thoughts?
OJ is back in the jug.
Yeah,
he
broke.
You know what? Any day of the week that we can get. I mean, he's the only guy I can think of really in American criminal history who I have no doubt of, no question that I can actually say on the air, he's a double murderer, and if you want to sue me, go right ahead and do it. Okay, and so, you know, I've always felt that in Simpson's case, it was going to take maybe, I think in a decade, and I was almost right on that. It's going to take a decade before we pick up the paper and read that he wound up in some alley someplace or something after a knife fight or whatever, or a bar fight. Instead, it just happened that he figured he could just, you know, break his way into a hotel room in Vegas with guns.
Yeah, now he's.
I'm pleased as punch. I have a big smile on my face. I mean, can you imagine if he gets convicted of this? He's going to go away to jail in some place. They'll put him in the general population, and someone will finally take care of him.
Well, he's 60, isn't he? Is he 60?
I think he may even be 62.
61, 62, you know, and O.J. is as dumb as a stump, and his narcissistic, psychopathic, I can't think of any other ethics that I can put to him right now, personality is just absolutely unbelievable. But I don't want to talk about him anymore.
But you know what? That's consistent, though. There's many of these individuals in American history, certainly. And one way or another, they usually wind up messing themselves up. I mean, here's a perfect example, isn't it?
Oh, exactly.
Here's a guy that could have drifted into history if he'd wanted to. Instead, he's charged in a felony break-in. I mean, dumb as a rock?
Yeah. You know, and with the grandpa brigade, they're going in and trying to rough up some guys over some...
Oh, my God.
Some
picture. Exactly.
That, the picture of him and what you call him from the FBI there, that must be a classic.
Yeah.
That would be one that I don't think I'd even want to take a look at. Anyway.
All right, let's move on from OJ then.
Speaking of narcissistic personalities, on your blog we talk about talk about Phil Spector. Here's another guy that thinks that he's got away with murder. And I've had Ed Losey on the program, who used to manage Lana. And it's
really, Lana Clarkson,
right?
Huh?
And I've covered this story many times.
What's your take on it all?
Well, he's nuts. He's pulled so many guns on so many gals, and this time he did it. And whether the gun went off accidentally, whether he pulled the trigger,
right,
whatever, there's no way she killed herself. There's no way. And I do respect Michael Bodden on some of his cases, but the evidence that he gave in this case made me scratch my poor balding head and wonder what the heck's going on here. Here's a guy that thinks, like Blake, like O.J., that he got away with murder, and he might yet. We'll see what the next trial brings.
But you know what? The interesting thing on this one is that I totally agree with everything you're saying. The interesting and notice how right now it's under the radar. That's the reason I put it into my blog, because it is under the radar, and I think we should keep track of this, because, you know, Los Angeles has got a history of letting people get away with murder. And in this dude's case, as you point out, there is a long record of him abusing women. And, you know, what I was so interested in about this case was Henry Lee's, I don't know how much you remember this part of it, but Henry Lee's aspect of it.
Right.
Dr. Henry Lee, where he was found to have, by the trial judge, to have picked up some sort of evidence, at the scene, which the prosecution surmised was a piece of fingernail that came off when Lana Clarkson was shot by this guy. And so a lawyer for, what's his name, for Phil Spector,
right,
who was at the scene, claimed that she saw him pick this up, testified to this effect to the judge. And the judge believed her, and he did not officially sanction Lee, but he effectively impugned him, which to me is fascinating, because he's one of our celebrity coroners.
Absolutely.
And, you know what you're saying. You know, and so what you're saying about Michael Bodden, who I have an enormous amount of respect for, who does fit into this celebrity category, you know, they're as fallible as certainly as anybody else. And by the way, Henry Lee testified in O.J. Simpson's favor at his celebrated trial.
And just because they're on TV, just because Michael Bodden is on TV or Henry Lee is on TV, that doesn't mean they can't screw up. And that's the whole thing about this case. But when you look at the personality of Spector, he's nuts. Yeah, he's just freaking nuts, this guy.
What's that about?
I mean, I don't
get that. It's like, you know, I do get it in an intellectual way, which is it's about power. It's about controlling perhaps the moment of death, which a lot of these sick individuals get off on, as we both know, and all that. But just to me, the hardest part is imagining, even though I know he did it, in my opinion, the actual doing of it, that you would do this to another human being, you would so devalue another human being. That's what gets me, and then have the hubris to think you're going to get away with it.
Well, it's a, you know, again, narcissism, a power trip, you name it. Fred Rosen's here, and again, go to his webpage at fredrosen.com. He's going to be on the Broad-Minded Show on the 15th. Tell us a little bit about that. You're going to do some regular work with them, are you not?
Yes. Broad-Minded is a show on XM Satellite Radio. And what it is they're on five days a week, and it's two women, Christine Eads and Molly Denham, and these are terrific women, and they call themselves the Broads, and they sort of riff on everything that guys could never do, certainly, and they have a particular perspective on things, and they've got themselves a sort of a mini-hit radio show. And I wound up going on, and we sort of hit it off, and what's happening is I'm going to be doing a regular segment once a week on whatever is happening in the way of crime in the United States. I guess it would be more the United States, though. I'd like to sort of broaden it out, and I'll be doing that for 30 minutes every week. It'll be on different days, and I'll be posting it at my blog. And my page, rather, what the days are.
Well, we don't see enough or hear enough of that type of programming, and crime really has no border when it comes to high profile cases like you and I talk about, and like the gals talk about on Broad Minded. And you and I were talking here the other day off the air about, you know, with the election around the corner, so to speak, and up here in Canada with a minority government that could fall any day, and the closeness of the two countries and all the rhetoric and the gum flapping that we hear from these politicians, like they're going to go to the gates of hell to get bin Laden. Well, they've been
isn't that great one?
Oh, that's
that one. They're going to go to the gates of hell to get bin Laden, and then bin Laden shows up. This guy, yeah. You got to give the guy all right. Grant, he's a mass murderer.
Yeah.
But he's got some. Now I'm not. Wait a minute. I got to be careful what I say here. He's a mass murderer, but he always seems to find a way to command the media, yep. Doesn't he?
Oh, he sure does. He sure does. He's a publicist's dream. Eh? All the channels grab him right away because we got all these dopey politicians that are going to the gates of hell and are going to move heaven and earth, but they haven't done a damn thing.
Get them, yeah.
They haven't done a damn thing, and we don't know if they're really doing anything or not. And they've been trying to do this for 10 years now, and it's gone nowhere, but let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about politics and crime. You know, we have the so-called war on terror, and all we hear about is these poor soldiers getting blown up every day, but yet crime is running rampant. We have pig farmers in Canada who are slaughtering prostitutes and then chewing them up and feeding them to his pigs for slop. We have mall shootings. We have Sibian liberation. People who tried to assassinate presidents being paroled. We don't hear about that in the media. We have this poor case now with this young Marine gal who pregnant, who's been killed. They found her body today, and it's all crazy. What are the politicians going to do about crime?
Well, see, that's the whole point. I actually paid attention for a change. You know, there's been a million of these debates. And I actually spent 4 hours watching last Saturday's debates of both the Republicans and the Democrats. And it really was fascinating because the only crime that any of them were willing to spend any time discussing was this garbage involving immigrants and the border.
Right.
And that was mostly the Republicans. And, you know, you're looking at, like, adults discussing things like constructing borders, literal fences on this border with Mexico, and of course I'm sitting there saying, you know, that's sort of devaluing the Canadians. I mean, give them a little credit. Maybe they want to, like, immigrate and go underneath the tunnels and things like that, you know? And I'm just looking at all this, and I'm going, this is ridiculous. This is their approach on crime. What about the roots of crime?
Right.
What are you going to do about that? What are you going to do, Mr. Obama? Tell me something, sir. What are you going to do? I don't want to care about. Don't tell me about prisons. Don't tell me about capital punishment. Don't tell me about tracking this guy down. Tell me what you're going to do to stop it 5 and 10 years from now.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to hear them say.
Yep, absolutely.
Threat set.
Yep. And what they're doing is nothing. It's a bunch of gum flapping rhetoric, and Rudy.
On both sides.
But we can't forget. And I'm being facetious here. Rudy looked after all the crime, did he not? In New York, he didn't have any police commissioners or chiefs or anybody that did it for him. It was Rudy that took care of crime, and by God, he'll do it again.
And you're saying that sarcastically, are you not?
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. See, that's an excellent point, because he is running as this law and order New York dude, when in fact, All of the great strides in combating crime in New York City came about because of William Bratton, who was Rudy's police commissioner, and Rudy fired him because Bratton started getting credit, and Rudy couldn't take it that this dude was getting credit, and he fired. Well, you know, some people say he fired him, some people say Bratton resigned, but you know how that sort of thing goes. And next thing you know, Bratton shows up in Los Angeles, and he's doing the same thing there that he did in New York, which is reducing crime.
And he's trying to, you know, he goes from NYPD to LAPD, the at one time one of the best police departments in the world, to a cesspool of incompetence and corruption and you name it. And he's able to fix it. But you don't hear the L.A. mayor taking credit for what Bratton's doing. Another guy that was famous in New York, Jack Maple, who the TV show The District was based on, he was another guy that, you know, Rudy pretty much ignored the whole time. And when you see these politicians taking the credit for what the, you know, the cop is doing, the chief is doing, it's just enough to drive you around the bend. But I don't know.
Especially when you're in the business.
Exactly. And cops don't get enough credit. There's bad ones, and there's ones that screw up. I'll give you that. And
It's the same thing as, since it's paramilitary, it's the same thing as generals. I mean, essentially, it's the same thing. It's like they don't get the credit when they've come up with the plan that stops something or changes something and essentially saves lives.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And what we'll see, well, I guess we'll see what happens here in the next little while. But illegal immigration is low on the totem pole, in my opinion, when it comes to this. Yes, illegal immigrants have gotten into the United States and committed heinous crimes, and they should have never been there in the first place. But it's a bit much broader picture than that.
But do you know that right now, not only do I agree with that, but do you know that right now there's a case on where there's a guy who's a Vietnamese immigrant, who is someplace, I don't know, in Mississippi or Alabama or someplace, he dropped four of his children off a bridge and killed them.
Right.
The guy was depressed, this, that, and the other thing. He's not from Mexico. He's from Vietnam. He's making news. You know, this is number one news story for a while. You know, again, it's number one news story for a while. You know, and tomorrow we're going to go back to the whole Mexican thing, you know. But I'll go back to the same point that I made earlier, which is Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Romney, Mr. McCain, please tell me what you're going to do about the roots of crime. Tell me how you're going to save some lives and save some money.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things. Fred Rosen's here. He's an author and a crime historian. And again, go to fredrosen.com. You know, just looking again at your blog, and these are a lot of cases that kind of fall under the radar, like you say, you don't hear about. There's a New York couple, a wealthy New York couple, Indian-born Varsha Mehen. I'm not even trying to pronounce it.
Yeah, don't bother. You're right.
They were convicted of 12 counts of enslavement, harboring illegal residents, conspiracy. 40 years of looking at 40 years in prison. Modern day slavery. You've got what's next? The return of Blackbeard the pirate. Here's a story. I love that. Here's a story that, besides seeing it on your blog, I may have heard next to nothing about it. That's a big story.
What, the enslavement case?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, but you know what's happening? What I'm noticing is that what's just astonishing to me is that it almost seems like at least every 48 hours, there's another big quote-unquote crime case, whether it's this guy throwing these children off this bridge, or whether it's something else, you know, or whatever it might be. it seems to me like, you know, and so whatever yesterday's case is, I mean, people talk about this all the time, yesterday's news. But, you know, because of the fact that you've got all of this attention, all this media on it, we get more information, we get more pictures, and then suddenly, boom, it's no longer there because it's tomorrow and there's the next one.
There's, we were, again, talking, and the last time you were on a show, and we started talking about the hiker that was killed, and you and I both said, you know, what case is that? We had to raise our eyebrow a little bit, but it looks like now another potential serial killer or a killer of one may be responsible for others. And these types of stories that fall under the radar that pop up, and services like XM and Sirius and shows like mine that we cover, that the mainstream media, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, seem to be focusing on, well, it's nothing but politics right now, and we're going to be stuck with that for a while, but it's that public fascination, I guess, with these types of cases. And you as an author, compared to media, and as far as what cases you choose to cover or to write about, what are your guidelines? How do you pick something?
Well, it's interesting you say that, and you ask me that question right now, because I spent the last, I'd say 36 hours finishing up a proposal that went to my publisher on the case of Miss Emerson, the Georgia hiker who was killed by Gary Hilton.
Right.
And the reason I picked it as a story that I felt would be interesting to the reader was because I realized that the hiker, Meredith Emerson, could be just about it. It could be my child, your child,
right,
someone else's. Here was a vibrant 24-year-old woman who was just starting out in life and decided to go and take a hike on her own with her dog and met this killer who now, it turns out, is probably a serial killer, which is what I guessed from the start. And he's just been he's going to be charged in Florida, or is being charged as we speak, with the crime, with a similar crime there. And so the way I pick it is, I'm looking at it from a point of view of what can the reader relate to, you know. And I think a lot of my readers can relate to being out alone for whatever reason, and then something goes wrong, and you meet somebody like this, and then boom, what happened? You know.
Yeah, and you cover that in your book there, But for the Grace of God.
Yeah.
With the serial killers and the, you know, the family aspect, and just how close to home a lot of these cases really are. And, you know, we live our day-to-day lives and we don't expect anything to really happen. And, well, you know, you with your job and me with mine, and we keep one eye open and one eye aimed, but average Joe Sixpack doesn't do that. He just kind of schlomps down the street and lives his life, and all of a sudden, bang! His daughter's been killed, or there's a missing person. I just had a mother on of a missing person at Rice University, and she's just beside herself. She doesn't know, you know, the kids just vanish. All of a sudden, that happens to you so fast, and I think you're absolutely right. When that happens, there's just, you know, you can educate people through your books, through your appearances, about how to do that. And really, are authors doing that? Is the media doing that right? We're not, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think what happens is what we tend to focus on is you know, like in this particular case of Ms. Emerson, you know, the fact that she was decapitated. I mean, that's the most gruesome element of the crime.
Right.
And even though the autopsy is claiming that it occurred after she was dead, that she was bludgeoned, but you still have that element, obviously, to it, which is going to naturally be played up, as opposed to, exactly how did this occur? It goes back to the thing that we were talking about earlier, which is, it's very nice to put people in jail, but tell me what you're going to do about the roots of it. Go back to the beginning. You know, you got to go back and take a look at it at the beginning to get some perspective on it.
Yeah, and if you don't, it just keeps going. And today, with the system the way that it is, with courts the way that they are, lackluster judges who, you know, their catch and release program is worse than any fishing show that you see on TV. And that's
I know a murderer that just got released. I know a murderer that just got released because he had a lot of money and was able to use the money to engineer a successful appeal.
And that's the part, in my 25 years of law enforcement, and you and I have talked about this off air, that I find so, it's getting worse, actually, what it is when you see the murderers bailing out, and you see the homeless person or the indigent that can't afford anything but a public defender who is so busy that they don't even know who they're defending half the time, who gets put into remand because, you know, that's just it, and they have to plead guilty because they have no other choice. The system is failing us, and it's something needs to be done. It's the best system we've got right now, but it certainly needs some tuning up.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I think that here on a national level, it goes back to what we've been discussing, which is, okay, how are you going to use your resources to combat crime? Don't tell me that homicide statistics are down when drugs, you know, let's say drug sales are up or whatever. You know, what are you doing to stop things in the future? Give me a friggin' plan and stop the rhetoric, guys and gal. And that's the point, I think. And, you know, maybe we'll get luck. You know, one of the nice things is that right now we seem to have ourselves a pretty good horse race going for the presidency in this country, which is the first time in a long time. That's a good thing.
Yep.
You know, that we can't lose with something like that. So hopefully, you know, I prefer to look at it in a positive way, that if we continue having this dialogue, maybe you and I and others who are listening to the show tonight will be in a position where we can ask some of these candidates some of these questions. Because one thing we're finding, we're getting more and more access, certainly, to getting these questions through with all of the media that we have.
And, you know, some of the great stuff that we do, my first guest tonight was the gal that's going around the country having taser parties. Instead of Tupperware, she goes around and she sells tasers. And I thought it was
doing well.
I thought she's doing very well, and I thought it would be great to have her on. It's her website is shieldher.com.
And oh, I love that.
And she goes around and she does, you know, put your Tupperware away and put your candles away. It's time that we start protecting ourselves, because law enforcement can't. There's a lot of freaks and creeps and losers out there, so we got to go out. And this probably be a great guest for the broad-minded gals. Is Dana Schaffman from Shielder.com? She goes out. She has a bunch of gals sitting around, no booze. You know, like, the gals like to drink the wine and have a little bit of fun, and you know, like that. But no booze. But they sit there. They have a little cardboard cutout or corkboard to take shots at with their taser, and they use it for personal protection, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think it's a fantastic idea.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Think about this for a second. Somebody's doing that. Let's say they make a mistake. Nobody's dead.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
It's not like you just shot them with a gun.
Yep.
You know, you can't bring them back. I mean, anything, certainly anything short of that, that works and that's humane. Gee, I'll go for that. Gee, that's original.
Absolutely. Fred Rosen from FredRosen.com, who will be on Broadminded on XM Radio January 15th. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
My pleasure as well, Dana.
And say hi to the broads for me.
I will definitely say hi to the broads for you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Fred Rosen, crime author. And go to FredRosen.com. He's an interesting a guest for sure, and he always comes out with great books. When Satan Wore a Cross, There Before the Grace of God, and many others. And he has an interesting crime blog at fredrosen.com. We've got about 3-4 minutes. I thought I would take a phone call or two if you are interested. Not to toll free, I do remind you of that, but I won't keep you on the air too long. It's 1-306-842-7884, 1-306-842-7884. And I remind you that our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts, listen to my daily commentary, leave comments, do whatever. Of course, the podcast is available at iTunes. I don't know a lot of the technical aspect of it, but you can go to iTunes and put it on your iPod and all that sort of stuff. And, of course, the creme de la creme of blogs that I work with is the Scared Monkeys blog at scaredmonkeys.com. That's www.scaredmonkeys.com. And there we, talk about everything. Comes to politics, sports, high-profile cases, everything that affects our daily lives. If you're listening on the podcast, obviously, and you're not listening live, there's no sense calling in because I probably won't answer. But if you are listening live and want to sneak in, quick call, quick comment, again, 306-842-7884. I get emails all the time. How come you don't have the toll-free number? Well, we had it and got rid of it and had it and then got rid of it. My show is normally a guest-driven show, and I don't take calls, but now and then I have a couple of minutes at the end of the program where I do offer an opportunity for you to call in. And if you don't, I certainly don't have my feelings hurt. I know that you are out there and like to listen. And again, I want to remind you, because we try to do what we can here for the missing, that Matthew J. Wilson, a Rice University student, has been missing since December 15th, 2007 in Houston, Texas. And if you have any information about Matthew's whereabouts, please call the Rice University Police Department at 713-348-6000. That's 713-348-6000, or there's an offer through Crime Stoppers at 713-222-TIPS. That's 713-222-8477. Just Google Matthew J. Wilson or go to the Rice University webpage. There's a Find Matthew J. Wilson webpage. There's all sorts of stuff there that you can find. Just take a quick call before we end up the show. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dana. It's Lynn.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing fine.
First, I want to say that my prayers are with Mrs. Wilson.
Absolutely.
Her son comes home alive.
You know, how heartbreaking is that? You know, we talk about it, you see it, you do it, but until you've actually experienced it, none of us can say we understand. And
it ties in with your other two guests also.
Yeah.
And how, you know, these things happen, you never think it's going to happen to you until it does.
Yep. Yep.
One thing I wanted to say is that, you know, what's sad about our society now is it's getting so that you're afraid to, like, be nice to the homeless guy with the dog.
Exactly.
Tyra Banks had a show on showing how, like, people weren't willing to get involved, or people weren't nice, or people wouldn't step in, and, you know, with a man and a woman fighting, or a child and a man yelling, you know. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, that's all well and good, Tyra, but people are scared.
Yep.
People are afraid.
They know the system isn't quite the system the way it used to be, and they're afraid that there will be retribution on them, and you can't blame them.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part.
Yeah, and I remember a time when they were selling pepper spray, and now we're selling tasers in most states.
Jeez.
And you know, I traveled to Mexico alone when I was younger, and now I wouldn't go out of state without calling someone before I left, and calling them when I got there, and then doing it in reverse.
Absolutely.
And calling them at the rest stop in between. I don't know what's happening in our society. I don't know if it's happening more, or if it's just we're more aware of it because now things are going a lot of things are getting national coverage, whereas before it was pretty local.
I think it's both. Anyway, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll just give a second or two and see if anyone else wants to call. If not, we'll end up again. Remind you that the webpage is at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. I get email all the time. You say that too fast. Well, I won't say it fast tonight. It's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Fred Rosen's webpage is fredrosen.com. And you'll see all these links if you go to the scaredmonkeys.com where they advertise the show. Links to all of my guests are there this evening. Okay, we're going to end up. Thank you. I appreciate you listening. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.